Good afternoon. Welcome to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live this afternoon.
Yes, we are.
And
it's fun.
You can hear from Cindy's voice. It's actually sun shining outside.
It's not snowing, hailing, sleeting, sun shining as well in between.
That's yesterday.
It was a crazy day yesterday.
Yesterday's news.
Wow.
We're looking for a couple of different things for listeners to engage today. One of them is, in the third segment, we're going to do a chef's challenge. And we prepared challenges for each other, but you're welcome to send us one in.
You can. I think that would be fun.
And we'd rather get that via email. So that's foremanwolf@wypr.org. And I'm confident someone's going to send something with
a cool chef's
ingredients
challenge
that neither one of us know about, so we can.
It'll be fun.
Sound like Abbott and Costello, but we may know some of it, and it's interesting to see ideas from other folks. If you want to give us a call, it's 410-662-8780. Toll free, 866-661-9309. And it's funny, it was sort of food and wine fantasies with the conversation we were having. And it's really what's on your bucket list, which has become a terrible cliche, but everyone knows what it means.
Sure, right.
I guess that's how it becomes a cliche, right?
Mm-hmm.
whether you're from the generation that your fantasies about food and wine, your dreams have to do with a show that you saw on television years ago, or modern food TV, or a novel that you read, or a movie that you saw.
Mm-hmm. I think movies are really a good one, too, to be inspired by. Not only with our amazing food shows on TV, which are obviously the most, you know, when you see someone in Thailand or another country, it's so exciting to see what they're experiencing. And that certainly has to motivate people to want to visit those countries, which I think is what's one of the most fantastic things about some of those shows.
Yeah, for me, I recall reading Dracula as a teenager and thinking about, well, the Carpathian Mountains. I wonder what the food is. You know, which made me really weird in many ways. I'm sure a teenager, but like, what are they cooking? What are the seasons?
Right,
what,
right.
You know,
sure.
Like, how
everything
do you go and find out?
I mean,
that's.
Mm-hmm.
But since that's part of my orientation, you know, like, you imagine how people would receive guests or entertain or you know, or they're going to Budapest or going to Vienna for me, or like steps on that path to that ridiculous thing that stimulated me from being a teenager, and we're curious about where that comes from for listeners, and we want to know what's on your bucket list. So if it's
food
if
or
it's,
wine,
yeah, it's the dish that you really want to master, that the thing you know you have to have as an accomplishment as a cook, or a wine that you really want to drink, or the place that you really want to go, and it may be a zip code away, it may be on the other side of the world, it may be in some, you know, ridiculous 1890s setting or something, like it was in my brain as a kid, and I think still kind of rests in there a little bit.
Yeah, I think the bucket list thing with, you know, what's on your bucket list for food and wine, and then your second question is, what do you want to master? You know, what dish do you really want to master in your kitchen? And I would be fascinated to hear what people really want to achieve, and you know, that's just really interesting to me as a chef.
You know, you're going to so-and-so's house. Like, if they're coming to my house, they know I've made a great pâté en croûte, and everything else is kind of like going to be whatever it's going to be. But that's my dish. That's my thing, you know, to have people know that, well, when so-and-so is in a prime, you know, they always made a great pâté en croûte. Something is still, but I don't know. I think that people actually do kind of work that way. Or that, like a caller from some time ago, James in West Baltimore, he would always, if the dish was pork that was being cooked, he had opinions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe he was the pork master of his neighborhood. I don't know.
Right, I bet he
or
is.
The barbecue master, you know. But that idea for people, I think, is really interesting.
So what's on your bucket list right now?
Which one?
Right. Well, let's go with food first.
Dish to make?
No, where do you know?
Oh, where do I want to eat?
Yeah, where do you want to eat food?
The problem, well, this is okay. This is not a problem. This is a good problem to have. I've been enough places that my time is the worst thing. So it's a matter of getting to places that I love.
Mm-hmm. And having the time to fly there or...
Exactly. Right. Being able to get there and or getting there and sharing it with the people that I really want to share it with. You mm-hmm. know, that's...
Well, let's say there are no obstacles. Where would you...
Oh, that's a lot of things that... I mean, like I want to go back to the Pretzov really badly, but I want to go to the Pretzov every week.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, the great restaurant on the Dolomites up near the Austrian mm-hmm. border and mm-hmm. on the Italian side. And it's a simple place. It's a farm restaurant, but remarkable and incredibly relaxed but precisely run, if that makes any sense at all.
Absolutely. Any countries in particular that you wish would like to...
Well, places I have not been to eat. I mean, the respect for food culture... in Japan is pretty nuts, and I have been very turned on by even just small bits and pieces of excellent Japanese cooking, or representations of excellent Japanese cooking that I've had a chance to try over the years, and I would be very interested to try those things more completely in the setting, mm-hmm. in the culture. I think that'd be super interesting.
And it is a world away. I mean, that's how it feels, you know, and to really be able to experience the food in the place is the only way to really, truly, truly understand it. And we can all try to replicate things, but if we don't have the same products that they do, you know, the indigenous products, it makes a big difference. We can all try to do our best, though.
Well, there's that, and it's also a certain matter of experience, you know. That's, are you really driven to, like, the idea of being on a sailboat and working my way around the Mediterranean...
Mm. That sounds like a good idea.
Because how much do I love to eat seafood?
Right, you do.
Mediterranean seafood, like simple, fresh, clean. You know, give me great bottles of rosé from down there, Vermentino or something, and just work your way around.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much interesting food, and the balance of it's all pretty similar, but they're all variations. And, you know, some of the products are the same, but they're twists and... That is super interesting to me.
Yeah, we just had one of, you know, a friend of yours, one of our Spanish wine importers, into the restaurant the other day, and he was talking, he had just flown in from Madrid, and I was just so envious of, you know, all the seafood he had just eaten. That was so magical, and, you know, and I was eager to serve our seafood to him, but I just, you know, their seafood is just brilliant. It you can't imagine how amazing it is.
Well, it's
coming out of that water and so fresh. I mean, so many of the restaurants, they literally get it right out of the water and they're cooking it that day. It's brilliant.
The four oceans that come right to Madrid each day. So that's you think it's landlocked, but that's Spain is not that way.
Right.
There's a restaurant there that I love that someone should put on their bucket list.
In Madrid?
Yeah, called mm-hmm. El Paraguas.
Oh, definitely.
It literally translates as the umbrellas.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
That's a good word.
Terrific. Smaller than, not a large restaurant, maybe 70 seats.
And what do you like to eat there?
Everything. I've never had anything that I didn't really like. Short menu, very, very polished but civilized with very honest flavors. Black rice there.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
With cuttlefish. Amazing. Yeah. I think that's my favorite thing that I've had there.
Mm-hmm.
Getting black rice exactly right in Spain, where the salinity is exactly right,
mm-hmm.
That's a big one. I love that stuff.
Yeah, it's that should be on everybody's list, I really think, if you haven't been to Spain.
We had guests last night who were talking about they've been back and forth to France 14 times, and they're about to go to Barcelona for the first time.
Oh, wow.
Mm. And I was like, I just about screamed.
I know. How exciting.
A quiet dining room. And I was like, I'm going to give you a couple of addresses. And I thought immediately of
I was going to say, what did you tell them in Barcelona?
In Barcelona, Pasadis del Pep. That seafood restaurant.
Yeah. Mm. Gosh.
Where, especially if they have the conchs, those are remarkable. But that's a great seafood restaurant. You can just eat fish all day there, and they have and there are a lot of winemakers in Spain that love that restaurant.
That tells you something.
What also happens is the wine list gets peppered with all kinds of goodies or all kinds of rare goodies. So that's the other side of it. It's not just what do I want to eat, but you know what is it in concert with?
Of course.
Like I know at the Pretzov, he's going to have great wines from the Alto Adige. But he is great at selection, especially of Austrian wines. So with a lot of those early dishes in his menu, He has all the great dry wines from the Wachau.
That's great.
From Grüneveltliner, from Riesling. And
he knows what goes with his food.
Yeah, and you can get great Blaufränkisch there for organ meats and things like that. So, I think we have a caller, Susan in Baltimore City.
Hi, Susan.
Hi there. Oh, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
First of all, let me say what a big fan I am. Thank you for this great show.
Thank you.
My question has to do with cooking French onion soup, or it's a goal of mine to make a delicious French onion soup.
That's a great goal.
I've always been scared of it.
Oh, why?
I've always had the delicious French onion soup at, Petit Louis, and it's always been so perfect, so I'm afraid to mess up on my own. So I'm wondering, on a scale of 1 to 10, how difficult is it to make that soup, and what tips you can give?
Not knowing what your cooking skills are, are you able to make a good stock?
I think so.
All right, there
I
you go.
Yes.
I think you probably can. So
yes.
It really starts with a great stock. And
great.
In this case, you need a brown veal and a brown chicken stock mixed together. So.
Beautiful.
Let's see if I can translate the volume we do. You want 3 parts chicken bones to 1 part veal bones. The veal bones are for the gelatin. The chicken bones are for the flavor. Veal bones are very neutral. And you brown the bones. You want to remove any fat from the pan. Add mirepoix, carrot, celery, and onion. Then add your aromatics, bay leaf, thyme, and peppercorn. Make a really great stock. Now, once the stock is made, strained, ready to go, now comes the patience. And a good pan. So you need it has to be a stainless steel pan.
Mm.
Has to be heavy bottomed. And you need a wide bottomed pan because you need a lot of surface area in which to cook the onions. So you're going to caramelize the onions. So you need nice, wonderful onions. We use Spanish onions when we make it. If you had Vidalias available to you, that would be great too. But why bother? Don't worry yourself with that. Just go get a bunch of great Spanish onions, slice them very thin, not paper thin, but short of that, and begin to caramelize them in almost a dry pan. So you're barely going to put any fat in that pan at all. It's sort of...
And it's going to go really slowly.
Yeah, contrary to how we cook. It's contrary to how you would normally cook. You would usually cook something in a lot of fat or a decent amount of fat. And then as they begin to caramelize, you just have to keep moving them around. The whole thing... is getting the proper amount of caramelization without burning them. And then, you're probably talking about 30 minutes to brown your onions. So you have to be there, you have to be around, stir the pan, move them around, and then you add your stock and let it cook. Now you can add a little bit of pepper to the pot. If you want, you could add a little bit of alcohol. In the case, you could add a little bit of red wine or a little bit of cognac. And then once that is actually done, once you have the flavors that you want, then you are building your soup when you're ready to eat. We use Gruyere and Reggiano, about 50-50. And the Gruyere is extremely important. You would just want a good piece of Gruyere. That's really not hard to find because I use Gruyere every morning. Tony,
There's a little cheat that we use with, honestly, it's just a practical one. When you're putting onion soup into a crock, if you just put the cheese on top, it will sink when it melts. If you take a very thin charger of bread or toast and put it there on top of the soup, then...
Did you say a charger?
A charger.
She doesn't... I don't even know what that means.
You
want a thicker toast point.
You don't know what a charger is?
not in reference to food. Sorry, Susan. You want a thick toast. So a good piece of bull, maybe a quarter of an inch thick, and you would want to toast it. So you toast that, you put that on top of your soup, and then you put the Gruyere and the Reggiano on top of that. And then, do you have a broiler?
Yes.
Okay, well, is it under your stove? Or
it is under the stove,
See, that's the problem. See, now I don't know how you're going to brown that at home. If you don't have a top broiler in a space where you can actually put the crock, the soup bowl, which we use lion's heads. Do you know what
right.
I mean? Yeah, okay. You may have to buy a blowtorch. And I am not fond, and they're fun to have. If you like creme brulee, it's nice to have a torch around.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not fond of the potential... fuel feeling that you may get a little bit of residually from that. So it's best to use a broiler if you have it. If not, then you're kind of stuck using a blowtorch.
Also, please don't burn your house down.
That's big advice against that.
That would be.
Any questions from that, Susan?
No.
That I didn't answer?
Great, and it's making my mouth water. Oh,
okay.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Great question. All the
best.
Thank you very
much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, when we come back on Formula Wolf on Food & Wine, we're live taking your calls, 410-662-8780, toll-free 866-661-9309. The question is, what's on your food and wine bucket list? What dish do you want to master? What wine do you want to drink? Where do you want to go, and what dish are you chasing in that place? What is it that you want to eat? Give us a call. Let us know. On Formula Wolf on Food & Wine on WIPR. Welcome back to Formula Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live today taking calls, 410-662-8780, toll-free 866-661-9309, or email us, foremanwolf@wypr.org. We already have a couple of emails. We already have at least one ingredients list.
I'm excited to see
For the Chef's Challenge. I don't know if you're going to be excited to see it or not.
Uh-oh.
We'll see.
We'll give it a shot.
Yeah, it's probably more fun than what I wrote up.
Oh, boy. Uh-oh. Yeah. Oh, well, that's something to look forward to.
Yeah, there's no question.
There we go.
And we have another email with...
okay, let's do it.
...with some people's bucket list items. So this is from Kima. I'd love to perfect leg of lamb. Would be awesome to hear your best... I can't speak or read. Would be awesome to hear your takes on the best way to do it and wine pairings. Next place on the bucket list is to visit Greece and have an authentic gyro.
That's fun.
That occurs to me.
I like that. I would love to go to Greece.
A little bit of excellent street food.
Beautiful. Yeah. Have you ever been to Greece?
Yeah.
Huh.
Not in a long time. 1980.
Oh, yeah.
There was
high school trip.
Big communist drama.
Oh, golly.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that was a long time ago. I bet that was interesting to be there then.
There's a certain level of ouzo discovery.
So leg of lamb. Let's address that.
and as for restaurants, I'd love to visit Chez Panisse.
Oh, I'm so excited. That is so cool. I want to go to Chez Panisse. Cool. I totally agree. I've always wanted to have Alice Waters food. She is an amazing chef and really, really has had a huge influence on what has happened in cooking since the 1970s and is an amazing woman and has done a lot to help a lot of people. So
I
want to go to Chez Panisse too, Kima.
I do get an all caps. I love black rice.
Tony. Oh, there you go. There you go, Tony. Me too.
It's just the best dish.
All right. Leg of lamb. I just made one for the staff for Easter, and I did. It's funny because I did it two ways. I don't normally make different food for different people that work in the kitchen, but I just wanted to do something nice for my cooks. So I did a 14-ounce lamb leg steak for them, which is fun because it has the bone in, so you get a little bit of that marrow bone, which means you can eat the marrow, and it's easy to cook because you can grill it. So they're really not that thick. They're like, what, half an inch thick, maybe?
Yeah, to get a 12 or 14-ounce steak.
And
the trick is you've got all four sections of muscles.
Right. That's the hard part of cooking a leg of lamb.
It's a cross section of the thigh, so
right.
You're going to get different temperatures when you grill it.
And I think that's the struggle that people have with leg of lamb, and
I think it's okay.
Yeah.
I like it.
It's just everybody. I mean, a lot of people want everything to be perfect on a piece of meat. You know, like tender.
You can do that when it's the same muscle.
Well, this is, as you just pointed out, they're four different muscles. So. And they're going to cook a little bit differently because of the texture of the meat from one muscle to the other. But yet you've got this solid piece of meat. You know, you can't break it down. I mean, you're going to cook the whole leg of lamb. So just marinate it however you wish. And again, I'm not a big overnight marinator. So for me, I do love rosemary with lamb. I did rosemary and fresh rosemary and fresh thyme. I just barely chopped the leaves at all, pulled them off the stem and mixed it with, and I rarely do this. I mix it with half extra virgin olive oil, which was the Spanish extra virgin that is not super expensive. Actually, I did all Spanish extra virgin olive oil because leg of lamb has so much flavor. It can hold up to that. And it's so pretty. And typically, we don't think of cooking extra virgin olive oil. I stuffed garlic in the center. I'm sorry?
The lamb so pretty or the...
The extra virgin olive oil. Sorry. And stuffed it with whole garlic cloves and I put a few little bit of pieces of orange in as well, and it just really perfumed it. It was very pretty, but with the steaks, it was just straight oil, salt, pepper, rosemary, and right before I went on the grill, they cook really fast. I mean, you're talking 4 or 5 minutes to get a medium rare lamb leg steak, but when you cook a leg of lamb, the biggest thing is, you know, your roast time. I eat meat rare, raw, whatever, but with leg of lamb, I really prefer it closer to medium. I just think because of all those muscles, it's much nicer when you take it a little bit closer to medium. And you will have different temperatures from the center to the outside. Right.
You have good fat.
Yeah, you have good fat. So you have good moisture. And the whole thing is start at 350. And if you haven't gotten good color by the end, just crank up your oven a little bit, maybe to 400 by the end of the cooking process.
And you can reach us and chime in at 410-662-8780, toll-free 866-661-9309, or send us an email, foremanwolf@wypr.org.
Because we are live today, which is fun.
So, you know, the thing that lamb does seem to need garlic, doesn't it?
It loves it.
It's funny. It's always like the first instinct when we... There's a dish that I love, that's cold lamb. I don't know why, but I have great affection for cold leg of lamb.
Sure.
But you have to roast it first. If you can roast it over a wood fire,
or
slowly
nice.
Roast it over a wood fire,
mm-hmm.
that's the best. There is one that we do. We rub it with salt and lots of crushed garlic overnight. So there's no acid in the marinade, and there's a tiny bit of oil in the marinade.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just slow roasted over the wood fire. And then we slice that thin and serve it on bruschetta with green olives and little red onions sliced up and a little aioli.
Green olives, Niçoise olives, all the olives love lamb too.
Costa Voltranos.
I love those olives.
And the aioli, or really alioli, which is the mm-hmm. Catalan predecessor to aioli, is what you use on that. And it makes the best little tiny lamb sandwiches.
That sounds really good. And do you do it on a toasted bread or?
A bruschetta. Just grill the little toasts and everything else is cold and it's fantastic.
And you definitely want a good sharp knife and you want to slice it thin.
Super thin.
Yeah, that's the best. And well, even no matter how you're eating it, I think you want to. And if you have the bone in, then you're going to have bone for stock. Oh, and you can use your scraps and you can deglaze the bottom of your roasting pan and get some good, you know, flavor from that. And then you can make a wonderful soup the next day, which is a lot of fun. So there's a lot you can do with something like that. And as you say, you eat it hot, then you can have it cold the next day, and you can also make soup. That's the beauty of roasting a big piece of meat, whether it's even if it's a whole chicken or any kind of bird, or if you just feel like, even though it's not Thanksgiving, maybe you want to do sandwiches for the kids. Or if you want to do, you know, something for the kids for lunch, roast a turkey breast. You know, it tastes great. It's low in fat, and, you know, then you can make stock. You know, that's the beauty of that kind of cooking.
The other question was about wine with lamb. That whole roasted leg of lamb that you're talking about, that wants something pretty robust. That to me is, I mean, Chateauneuf du Pape, Gigondas.
Mm-hmm.
Look for wines from the Priorat in 2013 if you want to be in Spain.
Sounds good.
Ribera del Duero will work as well. In the States, Washington State Merlot might be the best grape up there anyway. I think does very well. Some of the right bank Bordeaux Merlot-based wines can do really, really well. I know tradition is, you always think of a lot of the famous wine growing estates in the Medoc, especially in Pauillac, are famous for growing lamb. And, Mouton Rothschild, I mean, that's, you know, mutton is in the name.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Of the estate. But
I didn't realize those
wines need to develop a long, long time before you serve them with lamb, I think.
That's cool. Well, yeah, and I guess in your wine growing regions, if they are raising lamb, then you know they're going to be making some wine to eat, drink with it.
Absolutely.
Makes sense. Stuff goes hand in hand.
Listening to stories from some of the old growers this last time in Bordeaux, talking about the times they had to, like, when they finally were starting to get a little bit better money for the wine. It's hard to hear this. When they were starting to actually get money that they could not lose money on winemaking, they started to have to move the sheep around so they could plant new fields.
Wow. Okay.
It's just kind of crazy to think of with what's happened to price of Bordeaux.
Yeah, I was
going to
say that, yeah, super expensive.
Over the last 30, 40 years.
Interesting.
We have an email. We've spent a bunch of time talking about gardening and where to grow things and getting ready for the season. And a lot of people, I think, are doing that right now. So we have a great email from Sue in Lauraville. And so I'm just gonna read it. I'm in Lauraville, and I have a garden 60 by 100 feet. So that's a
pretty good-sized
garden in the city, yeah.
Exciting.
I begin everything from seeds starting in January. I have greens to root veggies, all the melons and squash. I plant corn, peppers, basil, cucumbers, tomatoes, etc. I dehydrate, pickle, and can, and I have food throughout the year. Mushrooms are the one thing I don't have that I want to do. And that's a little bit different than farming. I have two cherry trees, lovely fig tree, beautiful pear tree, and
that's
a well-producing peach tree.
Wow.
I have asparagus, strawberries, and raspberry bushes that produce twice a year. I have these beautiful structures I use for my climbers. They're 6 to 10 feet tall, using electric and metal tubing, and painted them in all primary colors and used strong netting to hold the squash and melons. She must have been listening to the program with George, basically cursing out parsnips for being parsnips. I have no trouble with parsnips. My soil is loose, 2 feet down. Huh. Great for all kinds of potatoes as well. Exactly.
Good for her.
Yeah, she's...
That's great.
And you got a little elevation there. I plant in a staggered way, so I don't have everything ready at the same time, which is, that's just smart. Although I give so many of my seedlings away, I began using all of my veggies through dehydration, canning, freezing, and pickling so I can use through the winter. It took me 3 years to get clear on what works, which that makes sense because if you're actually going to try to utilize everything, you have methodology for everything, get everything planted in the right rhythm, get it to harvest in the right rhythm, that's 3 years is actually short. That's pretty smart. I can give many veggie gifts around the holidays as well as making lots of butternut squash dishes and soups in the fall. I make burritos that I freeze and heat all winter. Anyway, just saying you can do so much with a little plot of earth.
She's amazing. That's great. Well done. I hope I can say that in 3 years with my garden. Amazing.
That's dedication is what that is.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. Good for her.
There's no question. So what's on your list, Sind?
You know, I really, really want to spend more time in South America. Because my chef mentor was from Argentina, and I've been there once. I would really like to go back, and I really want to go to Patagonia.
Do you need a list of some tango bars?
I do, because, you know, I'm a crazy tango person, but as well as on the side, I'd like to eat a whole lot of food in that region. But, yeah, I'll have to take some tango lessons before I go. But I really want to experience the lower part of South America. And I have friends that have, you know, I have friends in different parts of South America. So I really want to go there and explore some more. And I have also a great desire to go to the southern part of Spain because I really haven't had an opportunity to do that, having been mostly in the northern part of Spain. So I would, those are two areas that I'd really, and I've never been to Mexico. I would really like to go to Mexico, very, very much. I would love to experience the different regional cooking cuisines in Mexico. Actually, I would say that might be top of my list right now.
I think the diversity of the cooking in different parts of Mexico is a lot stronger than people recognize.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's a beautiful, potentially a beautiful cooking to really greatly understand. So that's it. You know, I'd like to go everywhere. I'd like to see everyone's food. I'd like to experience everything I can. But as you pointed out, we don't have time for things like that. So I feel like those are reasonable. You know, I am going to...
Is there a restaurant that's top of the list or...
You know, we went to his 3-star, but that great documentary that was done with a chef from Patagonia, that's really what has inspired me. And I can't think of his name right now. But he was a very fine chef. And I think his restaurant was in Buenos Aires.
Talking about Melman?
Yeah, Melman.
Yeah.
I would like to meet him. I think he is spectacular. And I would like to have the experience of seeing cooking done like they did in that documentary. In Patagonia, because it's also so very close to, as I said, my chef mentor, the way that he looked at cooking, grilling out and being at one with the environment. And on top of that, I would really like to go back to France. I mean, it's just so close to my heart as a chef. I love the cooking there. So I am hoping I will. I haven't been. It's been too long, so I'm hoping I will go there this summer. And I greatly look forward to visiting some of my favorite chefs and visiting some new ones.
Wine on the list or no?
Not really. I mean, I just, you know, for me, you know, I just want to have what's, you know, what's there, you know, what goes with the food. I don't have, I mean, I guess if I had a wine desire, it would be to go back to Champagne region, because again, it's been a long time since I was there, and I would love to meet with some of the houses that I have grown to love over the last 20 years and meet with those winemakers and really get to talk with them, because Champagne is, again, one of my absolutely favorite things. And I just think there's so many amazing Champagne makers, and I'd like to meet some of these younger guys that are coming up that we've started to purchase their wines, and I'd like to hear what they have to say. I mean, to me, meeting with a winemaker is a great, great cultural experience, and really a window into understanding the cooking of the region. It really is. I never realized how much I could learn about food from a winemaker. I think that's quite a statement, actually.
We're going to take one call with, looks like, a question before we go to break. It's Judy in Lewistown, Pennsylvania.
Hey, Judy.
Lewistown, yes. Thanks for taking my call before the break. I appreciate it. I'm going to use cornmeal as a dredge for chicken, and some of the recipes say that I should soak the cornmeal in lime water. And I was thinking that in Pennsylvania, where I am, the water is, it's groundwater anyway, and it has a lot of lime in it. But do you, and I know you make these wonderful cornmeal oysters.
Yes,
Do you use?
No. And I've not heard of that. And my family's from Pennsylvania, but maybe there is a reason. But for me, when I go to make fried chicken, I actually marinate my chicken breast, or you can certainly do the legs as well, in buttermilk.
Yeah,
and that does make the chicken very moist, and it does. I mean, it has high acid. It's going to break down the chicken a little bit. It works the same way as a marinade, mm-hmm. And so yeah. And then when I go to do my breading procedure, I actually make a paste with the buttermilk. I'm sorry, yeah. Tony's going to finish.
Yeah, no, that's. I don't think you need that particular okay. that particular additive. The trick is to go with the moist into the dry and pat that and get a very clean coat, and then go into frying oil where you have it, whether you're doing it in a pan or whether you're doing it deep fried, where you have the temperature control really nicely and you have a proper level.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Bye.
You can reach us today. We're live, 410-662-8780. Or email us foremanwolf@wypr.org. We'd like to hear from you all about your bucket list, if you like. We do have a chef's challenge coming up in the last segment. We have a few minutes for a few more calls, if you like, on Foreman Wolf on Food and Wine on WYPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And, you know, Cindy, so you think the movies are the thing that sort of inspired you to have, you know, fantasies, things that drove you to be excited about?
I think definitely, because
dishes and eating in places.
Mm-hmm. I think when you see a French film, a foreign film, or The Godfather, and you see all these amazing, isn't it Sicily that they go to at some point? You know, you see these amazing shots of Sicily, and you start to, you know, and you see the, honestly, I think my dream of the best party is an Italian, you know, countryside spot with a wonderful table and the tablecloth blowing in the window and a tree over the top and lots of glassware and little children running around and a family having a wonderful time. I mean, I think that is always in my head, because to me that's the perfect moment, a family sharing a great meal outside in some beautiful spot, you know, it's sharing life together.
So tell us your thoughts, your bucket list. You know, do you want to rent a house in you know, the upper Piemonte and in midsummer, in the, you know, tucked up almost in the mountains, but be able to visit Barolo wineries or something like that? And what is on your bucket list for food and wine? And you can reach us live, 410-662-8780. Email us foremanwolf@wypr.org if you like. And so Champagne is the wine for you.
It really is. For me, and Shadowknife.
For me, it's always individual older things. Like when finding that bottle of something that I remember that was remarkable and is gone. And then one more appears somewhere.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting.
I understand. Like just driving through the mountains of the Savoie from Piemonte over onto the French side. I stopped for lunch at the strange little like spa famous for the springs or whatever from 100 years ago. And they had a bunch of old stuff in the cellar. And lunch was not super remarkable. It was in a beautiful park. But they had all of these older things on their list. And they had a bunch of, like, essentially college kids waiting tables who were not very interested. Hmm. So no one could find any of the wines I had an interest in. And finally, the lady who was running the hotel came to me and just took me down to the cellar. And I spent a few minutes and showed her where things were.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I had a bottle of 1961 Chateau Canon, oh, wow. Saint-Emilion, for 60 euros or something like that.
That's amazing.
And a very lovely nap in the park after lunch, so I could responsibly drive the rest of the trip.
1961, that's exciting. But
that finding that sort of stuff is always that. So it's never one thing, but it is always that encounter with an old friend that you thought was gone, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You see a wine list, sometimes you see ghosts, and sometimes they come back to life.
That's pretty good.
So we have a caller on the line with a story about Chez Panisse.
Hi, Janet.
Hi there, how are you?
Good, how are you today?
I just have to share a funny story about people's expectations. About 4 or 5 years ago, I had a very unique opportunity to be in Berkeley, went to Chez Panisse, no reservation, went to lunch. It was lovely. Beautiful menu, wonderful wait staff. And as I'm waiting to order, I said to the wait staff, if I were to look out back of the house, the restaurant, would I see beautiful gardens? You know, that's how you think when you think of Alice Waters. Everything's, mm-hmm. you know, they're going right out back and cutting. And the waitstaff said to me, please don't look out the window.
What?
Wow.
That to me said that at that particular time, it was actually March, that and I never looked out the window. I didn't want the fantasy of having the thought that the chefs are going right out back and snipping herbs or snipping whatever was in season at that time. But it was a wonderful experience. I wrote it in my journal, which I do not have with me now, but it was just a wonderful, wonderful experience.
Good.
And someplace you all should definitely go.
Yes, thank
That's
you.
Awesome.
Thank you for sharing
You're
that.
You're welcome.
Have a good day.
Chances are there's lots of practical things that have to be out back.
Yeah, right. You know, it's a restaurant, like, right?
Yeah, exactly. We have an email from Nick saying, hi, Cindy.
Hi, Nick.
I have four. It's an email, Sam.
Oh, that's right.
So excitable.
Geez.
I have a quick 4-day visit to Bologna in a month.
Ooh.
Looking at offshoots to either Ravenna, Modena, maybe Reggio Emilia. Any recommendations for one place I can't miss?
He meant to say hi, Tony.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Tony.
No, I'm sure he wanted to say hi, Cindy. You're a lot more fun than I am, but I can probably give more information.
Well, we're not going to argue about
no, we're not.
All right.
There's a very famous and very beautiful 3-star Francescana's restaurant in Parma.
Mm-hmm.
It is not that far. There's a lot of great places to eat, and it's pretty easy to look places up. In Bologna, which is a town famous for a style of cooking, a very, very rich style of cooking, filled pastas are a very big specialty of the region. There are a lot of, honestly, in a lot of these little towns, there are taverns where you can just get plates of the prosciutto, that's the famous, you know, the Parma ham from the region. You can get what's essentially bread that sort of looks like a puffed up Pop-Tart.
Wow.
It's kind of like a slightly more organized looking pita of sorts.
Okay.
But there's a lot of pork fat in the dough.
Sounds good.
And they're crazy, crazy good.
Wow, wow.
And a little salty and a tiny little bit sweet. And then the wine of the region that can be excellent, usually look for the Lambrusco, and they're dry Lambrusco, not the sort of very commercial, sort of terrifying stuff you sometimes see in the States. And there are a few excellent ones in the States now. But there are also other wines that are made that are sort of like fizzy, lower alcohol red wines that you can have plenty of that are not very sweet, that are made from other grapes as well in the region. But that's and they're not super expensive, but that's a very easy that's a very easy way to.
I think this guy's a real food guy, so give him something like crazy.
Yeah, Osteria Francescana in Parma.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
Going to be
okay.
The most fully cultivated sort of experience in that realm, and that's not that far. And that's a cool town to get to from Bologna.
Definitely.
And I think it's probably you probably can just do it on a train.
That would be fun.
So there's some interesting old, really funky old hotels in Parma. It's an old banking city. No surprise. There's a lot of cash once upon a time going through the, and probably still going through the prosciutto and the Parmigiano business.
Oh, you know, you eat
town.
A lot of that
no
while you're
question.
There. Good.
You
have
ready?
A good trip.
You ready to do a chef's challenge?
Sure.
Now, the question's going to be, door number one or door number two? Would you like to do the chef's challenge that was written up and sent in, or would you like to do the one that I wrote up?
No, you can do the one that's written.
Oh.
All right, I'll do yours.
Do you mind?
I'm scared of, yes. All right, here we go.
You're not scared of the listener one.
All right,
one.
Let me have the listener one. Let me have it.
Oh, you're just going to choose the one
all
you
right,
want to
yeah.
do?
No, I didn't look at yours. All right.
All right.
Peanut butter, Kraft cheese. I knew it. Swiss chard, semi-sweet chocolate, hard-boiled egg, fiddlehead ferns, smoked salt, capers, shad roe, rutabaga, sea urchin, black walnuts, fresh hops. There's not a lot of
it's not a protein-driven kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, the point is to feed someone, right? So,
shad roe. Let's see. Shad roe is exciting to cook. Let's just start there because you have to put a lid on that pot.
It's
and be
more exciting
pretty,
than you
yeah,
want it to be.
Yeah, it's way exciting. It can pop all over you and burn you and then, you know, then you cry. So hot pan, good oil, like neutral oil, corn oil, brown the shad roe. You're going to have to take the lid off and turn it over and brown it on the second side. Pop it in the oven for a minute, but do not cook it too long. I think black walnuts might actually be really good. So let's hit the, I'm going to definitely use a little bit of smoked sea salt and using it sparingly because it's strong, to season the shad roe. And, I'm going to throw in a separate pan. I'm going to put the fiddlehead ferns in with a little bit of, oil in the pan, work the fiddlehead ferns. Again, they cook pretty quickly. Toss in, tourneyed rutabaga, which I've already blanched off in salted water. So what do we have? Fiddlehead ferns, rutabaga. I'm going to break up the walnuts in my hand after I've roasted them in the oven. I'm going to throw them in the pan, and I'm going to put the capers in too. So work all of that, and that's the shad roe. Okay. Sea urchin.
So that's a garnish for the shad roe?
Yeah. And then the sea
urchin. Make a little brown butter or something? Or
sure. Brown butter. And then I don't really know what I'm doing with peanut butter.
I love peanut butter.
Or Kraft cheese, which I'm not even sure what's Kraft cheese? What does that mean?
It's a processed American cheese.
Oh boy. I'm not using those. Sorry, whoever wrote this. Swiss chard. Okay. And boiled egg. I'm making a salad with that. I'm actually a warm salad. So I'm going to, chiffonade the Swiss chard, wash it first, chiffonade it, and then toss it around in a little bit of, again, a neutral oil in the pan. And then I'm going to lay it out on the plate and I'm going to slice the hard boiled egg and lay it over top of the Swiss chard. What else do I have? Oh, and then I'm going to put a little bit of sea urchin on top of that.
How are you going to cook the sea urchin?
I'm going to not cook it.
You're not going to cook it?
Yeah. So it'll be raw. No, that's not possible. I'll saute the sea urchin. Yeah. And put that on top with the eggs and the Swiss chard. And I also don't know what to do with fresh hops. I'll make some beer with the fresh hops. There. And then...
There's applause from the control room. Cindy's new beer project.
Peanut butter and Kraft cheese. I'm sorry.
I'll eat the peanut butter.
All right. And the sweet, semi-sweet chocolate. I don't even. Yeah, sorry. I'll melt the chocolate. And I have vanilla ice cream in my freezer. So I'll just pour that over some vanilla ice cream that I have in my freezer. And then I'll put a spoon of peanut butter on top of it. Okay, this is not my dream.
You can make peanut butter cups.
I could make peanut butter, my own peanut butter. There you go, Tony. Maybe this is your challenge. And that's it.
I just like chocolate and peanut butter.
That's it. All right. I did it. Your turn.
That's a creative listener right there.
That is.
Thank you for sending me the list.
Mm-hmm. Did I give you yours yet? No. Here we go. Here you go, Tony.
Let's see.
It's got a lot of stuff on it. You may run out of time.
Very lovely.
You're going to have to go fast.
Wild rockfish. Nothing like an ill-behaved rockfish. Soft-shell crab, little neck clams, garlic, shallots, onion, green onions, chives. Okay, spinach, arugula, butter, extra virgin olive oil, white wine, broccoli, zucchini, bacon, chorizo, leeks, linguine, tomato paste. All right. I definitely want to make a soup. I want to make a soup with all the onion products, all the garlic, the shallots, the onion, the green onions, the chives, the leeks. And I'm going to start that soup with a chorizo. And I'm going to season the pan with the chorizo a little bit, let it melt out a little bit of the spice and the fat, and clarify a little bit of butter. And then all the onion product goes in that pan. Going to sweat that for a while.
I can't believe there isn't any peanut butter on that list.
No, there's not. There's not. But, you know, there could be. You never know. But, yeah, I definitely want to use all the onion products to make a soup. There is not cream, so that's okay. And, yeah, look at me asking for cream and using butter. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
What I really want is stock. I don't have the stock, but I'm still going to get good flavor between the chorizo and all the onion products. And water and time and patience. And I might finish with a little bit of the tomato paste that you have hiding here on the list. Just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And what I wish I had was a little bit of like a chili to give it a little bit of a pop to it. I'm going to get some seasoning from the chorizo, but I'd like to get that surprising like six onion soup.
What kind of chili?
Something that's going to make sense with the clams, because I love to put the clams and that little bit of tomato paste and a little bit of chili in that that onion soup as a finish. The wild rockfish, I want to grill the whole fish. So, you know, scale it, gut it, keep the head on the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And get a good fire going on the grill. Grill it on both sides while finishing. Maybe stuff it with the spinach. Would be fun. And if I had any citrus, I'd also put that in there. Maybe reserve a little bit of garlic for that stuffing as well. I want something to give a little bit of perfume and a little bit of that. Rockfish has flavor, big flavor. I definitely want that for a main course, and just fillets of that with a simple vinaigrette, extra virgin olive oil in the vinaigrette. And then you've given me soft shell crab, good fun. Let's pan fry them, dust them in flour, pan fry the soft shells. Make almost like a warm salad with broccoli, zucchini, crispy bacon. And you give me linguine and tomato paste. And honestly, very simply, I think it may become a dish that I would not normally do, which would be a pasta dish. Linguine with a little bit of the onion, the bacon, and that warm salad with the soft shell.
Sounds good.
Fried out of the pan. And the white wine. Just says white wine. Maybe Falangina, something like that. Anyway, that's all we have time for. Thanks for the challenge. Thanks for listener calls and emails.
Yes. Thank you very much for calling in.
And if you want to reach Chef Cindy Wolf on social media.
At Twitter, it's Chef Cindy Wolf. And on Instagram, it's Chef Wolf. I'd love
if
to
it's
talk with you.
Comments, questions, ideas for the program. Foreman Wolf at WYPR.org. Thanks for listening.